Geopolitics and Empire is joined by writer and researcher Leo Zagami of leozagami.com. He was involved with secret societies earlier in life, but has since seen the light and has been speaking out against the New World Order for years and authoring many books, a prolific writer. He was on my TNT radio show last year to discuss Confessions of an Illuminati, Volume 7, From the Occult Roots of the Great Reset to the Populist Roots of the Great Reject. His latest just published must-read book is Confessions of an Illuminati, Volume 8, From the Rise of the Antichrist to the Sound of the Devil and the Great Reset. Welcome to Geopolitics and Empire, Leo.
Always a pleasure. Thank you for having me on. And I'm glad that you have started reading the new book, so you have an idea of my latest work, which, of course, took most of the time since we last spoke, because it's been, as you can imagine, a very big kind of project to put together, almost 700 pages. We are publishing it basically in two languages at the same time, Italian and English. So the reactions have been very positive up until now. So I'm very glad to have spent so much time on it. Though, I mean, it's kind of incredible how time flies and how we are reaching already the last goals, let's say, of the Antichrist and the New World Order in this project, which is unfolding in front of our eyes every day. So thank you again, and I hope that we can disclose most of the contents. Though, like I said, this is almost a 700 pages book, so very difficult to summarize everything, but we will try.
Yeah, we'll be just scratching the surface. And like I said, I always read, complete my guests' books, and I enjoy very much your writing style. It's informative, but also fun, easy to read. It's a joy to read and masterfully written. And, I don't know where to start, but, you know, the entertainment industry you sort of describe as a world increasingly inflated by music and films with an often sinister and woke taste, if not esoteric, occult, and above all, satanic, especially with the inflated horror genre, you say. And, you know, this is something more and more I've been seeing as the years go by. And frankly, some years ago, I've just tuned out of largely the music and how I don't watch really movies anymore because of the stuff that you're talking about in your book. So, you know, what's going on here, Leo?
Well, I think that the book really shows you that this has been going on for a very, very long time, since the very beginning of Hollywood. In fact, in my work, I actually started from 1909, 1910, when D.W. Griffith lays the foundation of the cinema business, arriving in this small place in Southern California that later on will become the foundations for the biggest movie industry in the world, which, of course, at that time was still in an experimental phase. But Hollywood became then the house, the home of a series of heretics from various quarters and people also involved in black magic, who, of course, from the very beginning found natural to be there because it was such a decadent place. I mean, even Aleister Crowley, I cite him in my book when he says that Hollywood, the Hollywood that he viewed when he, of course, came in the early stages of last century was, of course, a place where they were all doing cocaine, all having orgies, all indulging in everything that was really kind of separating this part of the world from the more Victorian approach that England still had at that time. Of course, things changed even in Great Britain since then. And in fact, I also have part of this book dedicated, especially the last chapter, to the connections, but not only the last chapter, these are mentioned during the course of the book, to the connections with the royal family, with the fact that the military industrial complex was aiding and abetting from the beginning Hollywood with D.W. Griffith and the film, for example, Birth of a Nation, which was the first film in which the actual military, the American army forces gave their own tanks for this. Of course, those tanks were a bit primitive because they were from over 100 years ago compared to what we have now. But it gives you already an idea of the fact that from the very early stages, there was this encounter between the military-industrial complex and Hollywood, and at the same time between Freemasonry and Hollywood, which I also, of course, talk about. And Freemasonry, of course, naturally brings us back to England, which, of course, the United Grand Lodge of England presides over the so-called regularity of Freemasonry, regular Freemasonry around the world. I'm going all the way up.
If you do find yourself stuck in a smart city, the Nomos app will help you survive COVID-1984 and the Great Reset. Nomos is a time bank that can be used by communities anywhere in the world. You just need to talk people into using it. I've spoken to the developer who is passionate about creating solutions for surviving and thriving in the apocalypse. Nomos is available in English and Spanish, so hurry and visit nomos.net before they roll out the cashless society and put you in the algorithm ghetto.
So I would say that we have, of course, Hollywood as a tool of politics, which is still now, like you said right at the beginning of the interview, you mentioned the woke ideology, for example. But in this book, I go much deeper than just talking about the fact that now we have a Hollywood with the woke. I go after the reasons why we have this woke ideology and the School of Frankfurt, the Frankfurt School, for example, which, of course, is a school of thought, which you are acquainted with, is also part of the problem. Like part of the problem is also that heresy within Judaism, which we call Sabbatean, the Sabbatean heresy, which later on became also the Sabbatean Frankist heresy, because from the actual Sabbatean heresy conducted by Sabbatai Zevi, there was his supposed alleged reincarnation, Jacob Frank. These people are not really well known outside of the Jewish world. That's why every time we tend to say, oh, it's all about the Jews, and then the people tend to become anti-Semitic. Inevitably, we have the Connie West syndrome that appears when you have that kind of wrong perception of what Judaism really is about. So as a non-Jew, you have to understand it. Now, I'm only partly Jewish, so I'm not really a practicing Jew. I'm a Catholic. I was raised as a Catholic. But I have Jewish friends, people who have practiced all their life Judaism. I lived amongst them at times for long periods of my life to learn about their traditions. And I learned about the fact that this heresy created a lot of problems. So it's a little bit like, you know, we have Catholicism. It would be for me wrong as a Catholic to condemn nowadays Catholics in todo, like they would say, all of them, because of Pope Francis. We know that Pope Francis is simply a representative of that distorted view that has taken over the church since the Second Vatican Council. So the same can be said about Judaism. Now, for example, just yesterday in Rome, actually today in Rome, sorry, there is an event about artificial intelligence and the Abrahamic faiths that are basically signing this this commitment to monitor in their eyes the ethics of artificial intelligence. This is BS. I mean, sorry if I say that, but it's simply because they want to control something that will, of course, be more and more in charge of our lives. I mean, AI is not anymore the stuff of science fiction in some book, but is actually the stuff of everyday life, when we simply pick up our phones or we go on our computers or whatever we do in our daily routine. So we have also that element, which I, as you know, discussed in my previous books, especially volume 7 and volume 6.66, which I will refer to. But in this book, I also discuss how the AI is influencing modern Hollywood, how Hollywood is actually starting to work with the AI in the making of films, music, but also in the casting even, or in deciding what a script should be. And this is really becoming a little bit dangerous. Gradually, we are indulging in something that will inevitably bring us under the control of something that is not human. And human, being human is for us important, and that's why we want to preserve our reflection of God as humans. And this, of course, with transhumanism is disappearing. But in this book, I also discuss the metaverse, what it represents for the music business, for the cinema business. What is Hollywood doing with the metaverse in its first steps in the metaverse? What the music business is doing in the first step of the metaverse. So there is a lot of things in this book. And of course, there is a big chunk of it dedicated to Aleister Crowley, his influence in the music, in the cinema, in the arts in general, the connections with Hollywood that people might not know. And so when I made this book, initially, I thought that I would simply go and refurbish some studies and work that I conducted some years ago when I came here in California for the first time. Now I'm permanent resident of California since 2019, but I came here for the first time in 2014 to actually write a book. And I was not living in Palm Springs. I was actually living in Long Beach, and I was going in and out of Hollywood all the time, thanks to my friend Sean Stone, the son of Oliver Stone. We started this collaboration.
He's been a guest on the podcast, and just to go to the music aspect first, because like you said, we're just going to skim the surface. But I think in the first part of your book, you're focusing on
The music business, because I was a record producer. People tend to not know that, because of course, from the age of 36 onwards, when I started to unveil my revelations in the public, it became increasingly difficult for me to conduct a double life of sorts, or continuing to be involved in the show business, music business, because first of all, it was dangerous. I mean, you could be poisoned, you could be easily targeted and ruined in those kind of contexts, no? So I stopped really professionally being a record producer and a DJ, and I went on to become what I'm now, which is basically I picked up my previous interest with journalism, which was always there, because I was I worked as a music journalist for many years. And even prior to that, I worked simply as a journalist in the 80s when I was very young for a socialist radio station. So imagine, I went from Catholic radio station initially, then to socialist, and then I went to Catholic TV again. I did a lot of things in my life, and of course I'm proud of the fact that within the music business, when it came down to my DJing, especially to the work I conducted in the clubs, I was always trying to put first the music. And of course, at that time, I was directly involved with the secret society. So I was actually thinking that this Luciferian approach, using symbols, music, and going around, I used to have this, I remember this one night called Electronic Voodoo, which I used to bring around. I used to do in St. Petersburg, in Reykjavik, in London, in Rome. And it was like simply in the early 2000s, late 90s, I was basically bringing back to this electronic music, dance music, also a cultural approach that was not superficial, not only, you know, let's drink and let's get wasted and listen to music. No, apart from the fact that the music was always a little bit particular, and I was the creator of genres in the middle of the 90s. I was involved in London with other musicians in the creation of a genre known as New Funk that later on became New Disco. So, and in all this, of course, I was doing it for the love of music. I never really wanted to do things that were overly commercial. So I produced a lot of records, but I never really produced the records that went in the charts because they were contrary to my own. I didn't want to be subject to what the record labels wanted. And actually, when I became rather known in the early 2000s, and I started to see that the record labels wanted me to go into that direction, that's when I said, okay, I had enough. Because I remember I was working with a record company called Tommy Touch, and I was releasing a record called The Magical Child, which was, of course, a record full of esoteric meaning and stuff. You can just go and purchase the record. You can see it yourself in the titles, in the sounds, everything. And then I saw, though, that already in a couple of those tracks that I had made, they had put their hands on. They had given it to other producers to edit, chop off certain parts, and reformulate them in a way that it wasn't really my product any longer. So I said, that's it. I had enough with kind of music business. And later on, also, like I said, when I started my revelations, I remember exactly when, in the fall of 2006, then I said, from this moment onwards, I will focus on exposing all this. Also because in between 2003 and 2004, when my internal battle within the secret society network started, it was before I came out in the open in 2006, there was a preliminary period of 3 years between 2003, when I went to Egypt, to 2006, in which I tried to see if I could save, you know, some of these elements of these people and bring them on my side and try to see if there was any of these mystery schools that was worth preserving. Unfortunately, I saw that that wasn't the case. And that's when, in the fall of 2006, I started to unleash my revelations upon the world, which immediately got picked up by people like David Icke. And then, of course, the rest is history, like we say.
Yeah, if you could then just, you know, tell us how then, because as you just laid out, you were working there, how music, for example, is now being at a mass scale, globally, basically weaponized against humanity. And you talk about like the frequency, the hertz, you know, 440 has been standardized and 432 is better, and how the Nazis instituted the 440 hertz. And then you've got the ISO organization, which sort of is behind this, which is based in Geneva.
The standardization of music, but also many other things in our lives that followed the Second World War. Just to terminate what I was saying regarding my period 2003-2006, in that period, I also experienced firsthand what it means to try to come out of these secret societies, to try to do your own thing and being sabotaged. I could no longer be the DJ or the record producer because these people were too much involved in my life. They would go around talking about me, saying, oh, this Leo has lost the plot. He's no longer, you know, one of us. He needs to be sided. So The actual problem was not only the fact that I could be endangered in working, you know, simply as a DJ in a club and somebody could drop me something, but actually I got locked in. They actually came to my house and tried to silence me in this way, which I find completely outrageous, simply because, you know, I might have said the wrong thing to somebody and they had connections. Of course, these people are involved with the military, they're involved with the medical establishment. So they take a second to lock you up and say, oh, he's gone insane, he's mad, he's just out of his head, don't listen to him, don't listen to what he wants to say. So this is, of course, something that happened, and they are trying with the music to control people. And so I was doing it consciously because, of course, I was within. I was a member of the OTO. I was a Freemason. I was directing a lodge of the Fraternitas Rosicruciana Antigua. I saw with my eyes the way they could literally manipulate all of the art world around you. So you couldn't then at that point be a successful artist without being helped by them. You know, at that point you were out of the business, because either you are in their ideology, you follow their leftist woke ideology, which back then wasn't called woke, but simply leftist, or otherwise you are not part of the agenda. And in my book, I start with this experience regarding the tuning of music. And so I explained how the notes, the whole system of the notes was born from ancient times, from the ancient mystery schools, the importance that music has in the secret societies, in the sacred, the world of the churches. You know, you play the organ, but also in the lodges, you play the organ. In traditional lodges, you have music that, of course, is used and was used to, in a way, elevate man. Then they wanted this to disappear. And that's why just before the Second World War in 1939, with Goebbels and with these people also involved with, because people say, oh, but the Nazis were against the British. Yeah, well, not really, because up until the war, the royal family was, of course, German, Hanoverian, and they were all, and the Queen was giving the Nazi salute, no? So these are things that maybe people tend to forget. And as I am myself, a member of the Lion family, the family of the Queen Mother, that fortunately was not linked to the Hanoverians, but brought basically a little bit of Britishness to that German family, I can say that. But I have my own roots to the Sacred Roman Empire and to the German aristocracy through my father, actually, through Sicily, because they also were part of that. So I in my book, I explain how the seven notes were actually constructed by Guido d'Arezzo following verses, let's say, and the initials of these verses became the initial notes, do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, si. Then, of course, in the Anglo-Saxon system, the A, B, C, the music is translated in letters, so it's a little bit different. Fundamentally, the fact that you tune the instrument in a certain way is because now you have a standard that came in to effect, though, after the war. So now every musician in the world knows they have to go there when they are according their guitar, their piano, anything, and they know that this is the standard and they have to follow it. Now, that wasn't the case until then. And it wasn't the case until 100 years ago when they started to implement this new tuning of the music in 440 from 432. And of course, nowadays, there is a lot of people that say that this is simply, you know, some kind of conspiracy, and that it's not true, and that actually, you know, if you play in one way or the other, it's all the same. The fact is that it's very difficult for a non-musician to understand this, but it's even difficult for a musician to understand the level of manipulation. When you are an artist, you are a little bit naive, usually. You don't want to think that your art is being in some way You know, that the musical pitch corresponding to an audio frequency is being studied, and that basically the musical note of A above middle C or A is kind of being decided by a group of people in a big office but that's what happened. Because, you know, when you said it, the ISO, you mentioned what I say in my book is an organization which, I mean, already should include fear only by the name standardization. I mean, what is standardization? Why should we all be standard? So what the intention was to take away that elevation that music will bring you to, because music can bring you to elevate your mind, your thoughts, your ideas, while instead the society wants to oppress all this. Now, that is the first phase of the oppression, because then, as you know, in my book, I also talk about the fact that gradually we went, and this you will see in the later chapters of my book, from the streaming of today, that everybody thinks it's a normal thing. Oh, great, streaming. I stream down my music. I buy my tunes on iTunes. I don't have to go to the shop. I don't have to buy a vinyl. I don't have to buy a CD. Now, you have to understand, I was a very traditional kind of record producer. So I know everything about frequencies, records, cutting vinyl. I went to cut every single vinyl I was involved with. The only time I couldn't go, I remember, was because I was sick. I got sick and I was in a hospital and I couldn't attend the cutting of the vinyl. And in fact, it didn't go well. And I was like, But because at that time we used to have DAT players, DAT. It was digital, but it was still a tape. The frequency was very deep. You could go deeper, 48 hertz. It was very deep. Then, of course, you could place it on a vinyl, and vinyl has as much frequency that the frequency that you can get on the vinyl is very deep. You can manipulate in a very good way. But when you go on a CD, it's 44.1, and it's like a cap. Boom! Everything is compressed. And of course, in the streaming era with MP3s. That is like the garbage of music. That is like the fast food of music. That's like buying, comparing a panino made by my Italian grandma to a panino made in McDonald's. I make a silly example, but this is to say how different these two things are. So in my book, I wanted to explain how this fits, though, the strategy of the Great Reset of Klaus Schwab, which is actually a figure I talk about in my book, because I talk also about his enormous influence in today's Hollywood. Everything that you talk about when you talk about Hollywood woke, but where do these CEOs go every year to take their orders? And that's what I showed in my book. They go to Davos, they sit down, they say, okay, next year you will have to have these characters or black, these characters or gay, these characters or this and that. That's what happens in Davos. And people don't know that. So, but also when it comes down to his philosophy, which is we should own nothing, you know, and be happy. We own nothing and be happy. Well, streaming is about that. You don't own the movies you purchase when you get a stream. I mean, you don't own anything physical. When you're watching Netflix, the moment you expire your Netflix, you know, you're not paying the subscription, that's it. You don't have the movies anymore. What is left in your hand? Behind you, you have a bunch of books. Okay, now it's true. I sell this book of almost 700 pages. Also on Kindle, because I know that a lot of people can go around with this big book, you know, in their daily life, and so it makes it easy for them. But when it comes down to Kindle, we're talking about the digital desert of the future, because what is going to be left about this? I mean, I can leave my books, you can leave your books to your son, your grandson, your great-grand, will have your books that are behind you. They would say, wow, my grandfather has some great books in his collection. Same thing I did myself, no? I used to go in my big library, family library, and say, these books were my grandfather's, this book were my father's, this book were my great-grandfather. And you know, and it's great to have this connection. This is unfortunately not possible in the era of streaming. And that's why I explain why it's been pushed by the New World Order. No more DVDs, even CDs, anything tangible that you could have as a property, It's gone.
Yeah, all of our life will be rented. I'm guilty. I bought your book on Kindle, but I and I'm cognizant of what you're talking about. You know, at any moment they can shut your access to Kindle or remove the books. But there is a way where you can sort of back up your digital Kindle books offline and convert them. But I get what you're saying. In general,
everything that we have in digital form, photos and stuff, tends to dilute in the course of time. And it's like you don't have anything physical, so it's easily vanishes, lost and stuff, you know. I for example, when it comes to my father, he has done a lot of work recorded on old tapes, you know. I still have the possibility of listening to those tapes. I can transfer them in digital format nowadays, but it's great that I have them. And if they were stored on something, and maybe I will never could access that work again. So I know that, of course, we have made a lot of progress in the world. But it's also true that some of this progress is being directed so you will own nothing and be happy, because the kids of today are happy simply having a mobile phone and going around like this.
Yeah, it's nuts. But you know, maybe to get your thoughts as well as some of the other goals, you know, whether music or talking about film. You mentioned in your book, you know, this Netflix film that they brought out, and they stopped, Little Demon, where they're openly now promoting Satanism and all of these
actually,
things.
That is not Netflix. That's FX and okay. Still on, but it actually was not fortunately brought to Disney Plus, because Disney Plus was about to broadcast this Little Demon. However, Disney Plus during the month of December transmitted Santa Clauses, where there was a bunch of kids saying, "We love you, Satan." So it wasn't much better. I mean, there is, like I explained in my book, the Sabbatean Frankists arrive in Hollywood, people like even Charlie Chaplin that we idolize today, but Charlie Chaplin was a pedophile. And he founded basically the very basis of Hollywood, the United Artists that created the very basis of Hollywood with D.W. Griffith. So D.W. Griffith, I talk in my book, is the guy who did this film where he basically promoted the KKK as the heroes. That was Birth of a Nation, 1915. He got the criticism for that movie, which of course was made on purpose to promote the KKK, that in the meantime had gone out of fashion in most of the United States. So he kind of relaunched the KKK. And the year after, he came out with another idea, which was this tolerance movie. And that was really where the Babylon myth of Hollywood comes from, because he constructed on that dirt road, which was still Hollywood Boulevard at that time, this immense Babylonian gates with the elephants of Ishtar, the every symbol, Enki, and all that was left there for years, because, you know, they will not just go there and throw it away. There was no graphic. Computer graphics. It was all done with 10,000 actors. 10,000. I mean, imagine 10,000 actors. It was an immense thing. And they reconstructed this Babylonian, There is various periods in this movie, but the main period is the Babylonian period. And that's really which gave the foundation for the Hollywood Babylonian myth. Because then, like the film that was just released a few days ago, Babylon, by the film director of La La Land with Brad Pitt, is based on that 1920s decadence of Hollywood. Of course, people should also check out other films, because that is not a really realistic film. It doesn't have, it's not a biographical film. But I would say that the idea of the Hollywood Babylon then is picked up by Kenneth Anger. Kenneth Anger, of course, for those who don't know, is still alive. He's the biggest underground film producer alive, influenced many people from David Lynch to many others. And his films were never directed to the masses, because in reality, as I explained in my book, there were rituals that were conducted for specific reasons. And he himself was involved with Anton LaVey, with the foundation of the Church of Satan. The Church of Satan becomes also a very important part of Hollywood, just as the previous lodge of Parsons, of Jack Parsons, and those people even before him that were laying the foundation for Crowellianity in Hollywood. But why did Crowellianity function in Hollywood? Simply because Sabbatean Frankism, which is this heresy, is what where Thelema comes from. Because when we go and study Aleister Crowley, Aleister Crowley was born in 1875, the year of the foundation of the Theosophical Society. He liked to say that. And he himself became a member of this Theosophical Society network back then, very influential. But Madame Blavatsky was herself a disciple of Max Theon, who was a Sabbatean Frankist. And the Sabbatean Frankists were involved with the foundation of various secret societies that influenced Freemasonry in the 18th century, especially, and gave them those elements of Judaism that, though, were that functioned in a way because the intention of the Sabbatean Frankists is simply purification through sin, to actually indulge in all this, the sexual magical rituals that everybody nowadays refer automatically to Aleister Crowley, were actually created by Jacob Frank and before him, actually Sabbatai Zev. He was the first one with his wife and his disciples to do these sexual magical rituals in the same way Crowley did it later on. And in fact, there is some research that I might also bring forward in the coming years, but I already brought forward in volume 4 of my confession some of it regarding the Sabbatean Frankist element and the inspiration it had, especially when it came down to the very basis of Crowleyanity, which then became the basis for modern Satanism. Because without Crowley, without Thelema, without the Do What Thou Wilt replica of Rabelais, Pantagruel, no, and all that, without that kind of inspiration, there would not be Anton LaVey, there would not be modern Satanism as we know it, that started in 1966. And of course, in a very Hollywood style, even if it was in San Francisco, it became a very important part of Hollywood life for many people in Hollywood. And then later on, in the middle of the 70s, there was a schism with Michael Aquino, who brought again Satanism into a more intellectual direction, because Anton LaVey was trying to make it more poptastic, more accessible, more understandable for the common folk. And sadly, that's what he managed to do with the Satanic Bible. And at that point, we can say the third stage instead is what happened 10 years ago with Lucian Greaves and the Satanic Temple, which is nowadays instead indulging in politics and Satanism, bringing around their issues with you know, parading the Baphomet and the Capitol Hill of some states.
They're about to have in April, in a couple of months, SatanCon, which they say is going to be the largest ever satanic gathering. And on that note, if you could tell us as well, you talk about this in your book, how
modern Satanism, so right. People can understand also their links to Hollywood, how it kind of is linked.
But also the goal of the entertainment industry. I mean, we're talking about music, TV,
the,
film.
The goal of the Antichrist,
right? Could you tell us, you know, how you said they're going to prepare? They're preparing us for the coming of the Antichrist, and you see in everything there's a lot of Gnosticism and New Age, and basically changing people's views and spiritual views, sort of.
Now, Gnosticism per se will not be a word that which means knowledge, and so they like to promote it as they are bringing you to the true knowledge, for example, of Christianity by giving you Gnostic teachings of this and that, but then Gnosticism became also Gnostic Satanism. Gnosticism, unfortunately, from my own experience, even when it was done in the most Christian way possible, it became always the backdoor for Satanism. It's it's strange. I mean, it shouldn't be that way, because a lot of the teachings in Gnosticism, you can relate to, you can find them interesting. But in the end, unfortunately, these currents are all kind of pouring into the same river of modern Satanism. It's like little springs of knowledge and stuff that unfortunately gets corrupted and brought to the same river. And so for me to explain better all this, I also mention the work that was conducted in Hollywood by my late friend Jordan Maxwell, which also was a figure that in Hollywood was rather known. He had collaborated even with people like George Lucas and so on. And I mean, I was capable to, I was lucky enough to spend some time with him the last year, a couple of years of his life. And so I wanted to remember him, but I also wanted to show how his work and the work of Manuel Piol were eventually used by the same elite that in the end wants to promote their own agenda, which, like I said, their own agenda is to normalize what 100 years ago would have been deemed as completely off by everybody. Even if we go back to the 50s and 40s, Hollywood back then had completely different values. Even Walt Disney was promoting values that are completely the contrary of what Walt Disney is promoting today. Walt Disney today, like I explained in my book, is promoting transgender kids, this, that, LGBT, whatever they like to. Back then, and they, of course, leftist values of sorts, inclusion, whatever they call it, equity and all this BS. Back in the days, Walt Disney was the guy who was ratting out the communists from Hollywood. He was actually working to rat them out during the McCarthy era. So I think that we don't have to go necessarily back to the McCarthyism or to, you know, to those times in which there was a persecution of the communists. But let's see what has happened since we have not persecuted the communists. And communism, for me, is simply another name for Satanism. I mean, it's not like now you can, you know, as you have a show, it's geopolitical. So there might be people that are not necessarily religious, you know. This book that I have just made can be seen not necessarily only by a religious point of view, but also by somebody who has maybe a non-religious point of view. Because in the end, these are facts. They are not speculations. What I try to write in this book, as you saw, is supported by pages and pages here of citations and quotations that are all cited, over thousands. Footnotes here, citation 1044 from credible sources that I have verified with years of study, and also my own personal experience. So it's a bit of a mix, you know, from my own personal experience, because I also studied acting. My grandmother was Felicity Mason in Coming. She was a very famous writer. In my book, I actually cite William Burroughs, who talks about her. I explain what her work was with William Burroughs, with Brian Geis, and she was working also as a PR, but she was working also with Fellini and Zeffirelli. So she was an acting coach. She had studied the Chekhov method back in the days when she met with my grandfather. And so... she was in the Hollywood business. She knew everybody from the Hollywood business. When I was like young, I just remember one day I came into the, and I opened the door to come and say hello to my grandmother. And on the divan saying hello, there was Rock Hudson. You know, it's like you don't find these kind of people in everybody's home. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, so, you know, or she helped me. She introduced me when I was only 13 to the Pet Shop Boys, simply because they were fans of William Burroughs. Mm-hmm. People don't know that, but they were great fans of William Burroughs, just as Boy George was a big fan. Boy is when he used to have that hat, Boy, and then he had actually a whole shop selling these items. was because it was a character from The Wild Boys of William Burroughs. And The Wild Boys of Duran Duran comes from the book of William Burroughs. And people don't know that. People don't know that. That's why in my book I explain all this. I say, you've been brought up for a ride in the 80s where you thought everything was superficial. But in reality, when you go and study the elements that make those poptastic songs, then you will find that a lot of them have occult elements. Like, for example, Alphaville. You know, people say, big in Japan. You know, they think it's a band from the 80s with a cool song. They don't know that they even wrote a song dedicated to Rose Kelly, the wife of Aleister Crowley.
Yeah, Aleister Crowley pops up everywhere from Black Sabbath to the Beatles.
Another part of this book, which is good for all of you to study. I think if you haven't had this experience in your life, I was part of the rave scene. I was actually the guy who did the first rave in Italy in the late 80s. But the rave scene became also a way for the Illuminati to spread their ideas in a very difficult environment otherwise, of anarchists and people who didn't want to have any control of sorts. And in fact, in this book, I explain how groups like Mutoid Waste, groups like KLF, you know, the KLF are the ones who burnt over £1 million in a bonfire in front of the journalists. And the KLF are the ones who are also very much connected with Discordianism, with the myth of the Illuminati, because we have, of course, the Illuminati, and then you have the myth of the Illuminati, which is just as powerful. And the KLF, known also as the Justified Ancients of Mumu, well, they were highly influenced by a guy called Genesis P. Orridge, which had created a secret society known as the Temple of Psychic Youth, in which all these bands came in. And what they did? Well, what they did was groundbreaking, because without them, we will not have all the culture of the tattoos, the piercing, everything that nowadays you see all those youngsters. They think they're being revolutionary. They think they're being rebels. Well, Genesis P. Orridge was not really a rebel. It was an odd character which I had the possibility to encounter very young, because he collaborated with Terry Wilson and with Brian Gyson and William Burroughs. They did this tour also, and there were groups involved in it, like Cabaret Voltaire. I mean, I was a very young person. I was lucky enough to grow up in this environment and understand this environment from within it. Now I can say I'm glad to not have indulged like these people in their own fixations. I mean, Genesis P. Orridge was so crazy that at the end of his life, he was exchanging body parts with his wife. I mean, he was swapping not only his sexuality, but his, I don't know. I mean, these people were completely out of it, some of them, but they had also a lot of influence in modern culture. And that's why people need to read this book, which has also these symbols on the cover. And these symbols have to be understood.
If you could, I mean, you mentioned Great Reset earlier, and, you know, there's
a couple of this cover. This is where you project the film. Sorry, this part here, no? This you have, no? In the film, no? Here we are, no? You used to project the movies, but it's also an 8. Then you have 8, and then you have still another 8. There are 3 8s. Then you have here in the back all these people watching the movie, which is Intolerance, the Babylonian scene. But there is only one guy standing on the other side, and that is me, if you watch. Because it's a little bit like that scene in which you have everybody with the arm like this, and this one with the arm down. I'm watching the other side. I'm not hypnotized by them. Here in the front, you have these eyes, of course, that are also... But behind you have the pentagram with the Baphomet of the Church of Satan. The eyes, of course, have their own symbolic meaning. And this cover was done, actually, by a guy who used to be, at the time, a disciple of Genesis P. Orridge, a member of the Temple of Psychic Youth. So, you see, I picked up the guy who does all my book covers. So, I mean, he has, he's also a former, let's say, Illuminati, because when I say Illuminati, it's not only the order of the Illuminati of Adam Weishaupt, which, of course, I was also part in the revival, but also many other orders, like, you know, I explained in Volume 1, I talk about this network of secret society that we commonly refer to as the Illuminati. And we have, of course, also an image, of course, we will never like to see, which is an explosion. Now, in this book, you have also the truth about Zelensky. You have the truth about Zelensky, the Masonic order between Poland and Ukraine that was at the very basis of the whole project of reconstituting and building up Ukraine against the Russian Federation. This order is called the Order of Saint Stanislaw. And there was actually an attempt 10 years ago when Ukraine was still in the hands of the Russian to outlaw this Masonic order. It didn't happen. And you know what is the symbol of this Masonic order? The symbol that now you see on the ground forces of Ukraine. The cross with the thing. That is the symbol of the Order of Saint Stanislaw. Mm-hmm. So I explain in my book how Zelensky used, you know, an actor, a comedian. Yeah, it's part of the show, you know. So, I mean, and then in front of the Grammy Awards.
I think he's supposed to go to the Golden Globes soon. And I mean, in closing, because again, if you
could talk- as you see, show business, you know, he was for years doing the president as a comedian, and then he becomes this tragicomic figure on the world scene, which is basically pushing us toward a possible nuclear escalation and nuclear confrontation, which is, I hope, never happening, but puts Europe in severe danger for this year. I think we might have some unpleasant surprises.
Yeah, and any other further thought on, as you said, this is all preparing the way for the coming of the Antichrist. And I was reading that the next Davos meeting, it's going to have the biggest ever attendance of world political leaders. So it's like they are just taking, you know, control of all national.
Not only that, there will be also more and more attendance of religious leaders. This happened, and I explained that in Volume 7 with Bishop Camara, the Red Bishop. And of course, that happened when he arrived in the middle of the 70s in Davos. And he was the most communist, progressive. The foundation of liberal theology was basically brought to Davos, but it was a continuation of something that was born in Rome. That's why, as I said, what is happening in Rome today, while we are talking, the head of Microsoft renewing the AI call for ethics and all this BS, because it is simply them wanting to control every phase of our life. And of course, their quest is always the quest for immortality. This is what the Illuminati, the mystery schools of all ages have promised. And so their quest is to eventually be able to upload themselves and become everlasting in what is known as the metaverse, which is also going to become, unfortunately, the digital prison of the masses, which will be pushed more and more to stay at home in their virtual cage rather than living the real world, which will be limited to the real people. So in my book, I wanted to explain how the Antichrist is basically has in the last 100 years, thanks to all these artists, cinema, music, and all that, people even willingly selling their soul to the devil, like Bob Dylan. Willingly and openly saying it. I mean, people like John Lennon saying, you know, I receive my music in the middle of the night and I'm emptying my head, and then, you know, it's not me. A lot of artists that we have followed and had the biggest hits they were not really the creators of these hits. There was another force upon them. In fact, I talk also about the famous, since the times of the blues, the pact with the devil made at the crossroads and all that. So there is also an element which is even more sinister. But all of this, of course, then to bring you an antichrist that will be aided and abated and helped along the way by Cyber Satan, which is the artificial intelligence. So their intention is now to start this project, which the Vatican Illuminati have already promoted in the last few years since the establishment of the Human Fraternity Document in Abu Dhabi, the encyclical Fratelli Tutti, this encyclical signed in Assisi in the middle of the pandemic by the Pope, which is a Masonic encyclical, and all of this, of course, to position later on an antichrist. But this antichrist, of course, has to unify all the religions, you know? So the Vatican is starting to put them all together. And they want the Abrahamic ones to have the control, ultimate control over the Cyber Satan, because, of course, then the Cyber Satan will help out the Antichrist in controlling, monitoring, in a way that is unprecedented in human history, as we know, because we didn't have this technology for control. I mean, the Soviet Union 70, 80, 50 years will have dreamed about having this kind of technology, but they didn't have it. So now that we see this kind of technology being unleashed on the human population, they start saying, oh, well, it's dangerous. We have to control it in an ethical way. Well, that is not really what they're doing. They are wanting to control it for their own project.
To control
their own project will be to microchip every single being on this planet. And in 10 years from now, the control for these beings, for the people who will be subject to that kind of control, you are without a soul the moment in which you are in this system and you are completely sold to this system by microchipping yourself or accepting what the Christians have called, of course, the mark of the beast, but without having to bring forward anything from the Bible, if you want to stay in very pragmatic, we can say that, of course, the moment in which you are connected like the Davos elite wants you to monitor every single aspect of your life 24 hours a day. I mean, Harari, the of course, the prophet of Davos, or the guy who is basically the philosopher of Davos, it's telling us what is happening. And Harari himself is the typical example of a Sabbatean Frankist. Now, the error is they all say Khazarian mafia, Khazarian, guys, why don't we study these things in a proper way so we can understand them, and explain better. So, because otherwise we tend to confuse and generalize.
Yeah, you talk about that in your book. And maybe just one more question. We've sort of covered the waterfront and just peeked into different parts of your book. But then what is there any music or film today that is healthy to consume? I mean, what do you listen to or watch?
Yeah, well, like I said, if we tune in our music to, first of all, in a different way, and we go back to the 432 hertz, I find that music can be a pleasant experience. We can still find a pleasant experience with music, but of course, it's also the same experience we can have with old films. When we see new films or we listen to new music, if we are a little bit conscious about what is going on, we know that that is rubbish, and so we should not even waste our time and just try to avoid going to see Avatar, whatever movie made out of a million different graphic contents. But William Shakespeare is rolling in his grave while you're watching this movie, And anybody who understands about the level of manipulation that we are subject with music and sounds knows that this is basically to completely brainwash people and not give them anything. You don't go out of a movie nowadays saying, I had a profound experience, like when you were seeing a movie by Stanley Kubrick. Or, you know, these were movies that sincerely were made to move you, to transform you. You know? Their transformation is going the other way. And so it's all about quick effects, sounds, blasting, and in the end, giving you nothing, but you are happy because you're eating your popcorn and you're like, ah, yes, I had the cinema experience. Wow. It's three-dimensional. It's this, it's that. I don't know. And in the future, you know, you can already imagine the cinema of the future, the cinematic experiences of the future will be probably done inside a virtual cage. You'll be like, wow.
Okay. Yeah, with the...
You know, how can people still see these old movies? They're so backwards. Or they can't read these old books. They're so backwards. Well, I don't find Tolstoy to be backwards. I don't find old pieces of knowledge to be backwards. Actually, I learn a lot from them, and I am always digging them. And I think that the problem nowadays is that we are left out of this experience with a culture which is impoverished. And so I hope that in reconstituting a new society with the people who will not accept what is coming in the next few years, we can maybe also reshape art in a way that gives. Art gives, not takes. And the arts have always been used since you know, for a long, long time for propaganda. We can't say that is, you know, we can say that even in ancient Egypt, the pharaohs were using art for propaganda, if you think about it. But nowadays, we have to be understanding that it's just like things that have been seen, re-seen, and it's nothing new. The new doesn't exist. Even with music, there is nothing new in music business. I mean, I talk with my former colleagues, record producer, DJs, and stuff, and it's just like nothing. There is nothing new.
Yeah, even as a consumer, I'm not seeing anything new. And as you said, we got to get rid of this culture of death and look more towards a culture of life. And again, your website is leozagami.com. You've got your YouTube channel as well, where you do live streams and people can get your books on Amazon and everywhere else. Is there any other website or project that we should know about?
Absolutely. Leozagami.com is the place. You get all the links for all the books. Otherwise, you go on Amazon. And I thank you so much. 2023, of course, is connected to the number 23, which I also talk about in this book because it's an important number for the Illuminati or for these people who were involved with this Illuminati myth, from Robert Anton Wilson to William Burroughs. They were all obsessed with the number 23. 23 is profound, is a profound number, and it's a number of transition. Let's see what this year of transition is going to bring us. And let's pray that it's not going to bring us something that could inevitably bring more harsh and oppression on the human population and on us, because we have already lived this during the pandemic era, but we are only at the beginning of this growing control effort that is, and also try to think with your own head. This is what the message of the book, with me standing on the, is try to think, you know, with your own head and not to project yourself in with the masses in this sheeple behavior that will inevitably bring us to a tragic conclusion. Thank you so much, Dan, for having me on this show. And I hope to see you in the future with maybe a new book, maybe with another show based on other conclusions you have reached after reading this whole book, which I hope you will enjoy, like most of our viewers. And God bless you all for 2023.
I hope you enjoyed this Geopolitics and Empire podcast. The website is geopoliticsandempire.com, and I encourage you to sign up to the free email list that notifies you of every new podcast and other important updates. The email list and website are our last lines of defense. We're being censored and deplatformed. It's almost impossible to find Geopolitics and Empire on the Google search engine. We've been blacklisted. YouTube frequently strikes videos. Facebook restricts our page. Reddit, Twitter, and LinkedIn take down posts. After the Associated Press mentioned Geopolitics and Empire in a 2021 article co-written with NATO or the Atlantic Council, our Patreon account was terminated. Vimeo also terminated our pro account at one point. In April of 2022, the Department of Homeland Security had PayPal ban us for life. The best free way to help Geopolitics and Empire is to leave a review on Apple Podcasts or elsewhere and subscribe to all of our media channels. You can find the video broadcast now on 5 platforms, Odyssey, Rockfin, Rumble, BitChute, and Brighteon. You can find the audio broadcast on the entire podcast ecosystem, SoundCloud, Apple, Spotify, and so on. My current favorite social media channels are Twitter and Telegram, but you can also find us on Gab, MeWe, Minds, Float, VK, Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn. You can support this guerrilla signal by donating via DonorBox, Buy Me a Coffee, Subscribestar, or Crypto. You can purchase a consultation with the host to talk about expatriation, geopolitics, or podcasting. You can also become a monthly or annual member via Stripe and receive benefits such as partaking in a monthly member Zoom call, get access to a weekly recording of my random thoughts, and a private Telegram channel. Thank you for listening.